Hey, welcome to It's Just Life with mother-daughter combo Karen and Gia. In this podcast, we'll chat about the ups and downs of life here on planet Earth. Come along for the ride.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 25 of the It's Just Life podcast. I'm Karen, one of your hosts. I'm the mother half of our duo here, and I'm glad you're joining us today, and I hope you've been tuning in to some of our other episodes as well. In this podcast, we love to share with you our own stories of the ups and downs of life and what we're learning as we go on this journey. So I'm glad you're here with us and tuning in to what we have to say today.
Yeah, welcome to the show, everybody. This is Gia. I am the daughter half of our duo. And it's really fun to talk about all of our ups and downs with you and the revelations that we have about life and how to live, how to be happy, and how to have a conscious business. And lately we've been starting our podcast with talking about something positive going on in the world. And we're trying to, you know, spread positive messages and not just bring up things that are challenging in life. And so I saw on Facebook a really inspiring video. It was some footage from the Paralympics. And it was the men's 100-meter race in track, and the men were blind, and there were four different athletes, and each of the men had a sighted guide to race with them. And so it was kind of like they were holding on to a little band together, like they each had, they were each holding on, it was almost like they were holding hands, but it was just like a little tether that held their hands together. And then they raced together, and the runner from the U.S. ended up winning. But it was so inspiring to see these duos coming together, one with sight and one without, and just the bravery that it took on both of their parts to partake in that race, you know, for the man who is blind to run with all of his effort and not be able to see just takes so much courage. And for the man who is sighted to be humble enough to sacrifice his perhaps successful racing career to be the guide for someone without sight is so beautiful. And it was so inspiring to see them together. And so if you come across that on Facebook, I definitely recommend checking out that video.
Yeah, it literally brought me to tears because it was so inspiring to see the courage of these blind runners. And I was trying to imagine what would that be like if you couldn't see anything, to run full out at top speed straight ahead of you, to have that kind of confidence and trust in the guide you're with, to trust that this person is not going to lead me into anything. Our feet are not going to get tangled up. I'm not going to trip over something on the track. Like, you know, wow, like what confidence and courage it takes to be able to do that, to just let go and run with all your might and all your speed down the track. And from what I heard, I don't know very much about track and records, but I guess these blind runners, they were just barely off the fastest times of the sighted runners in the Olympics who were running. I mean, they were just, just only slightly slower than that. So these guys they're awesome runners. It's pretty impressive to see the blind runners performing at that level. And then, as you mentioned, at the same time to see the compassion of the guide runners who like they bring all the praise to their companion, you know, like they point to the companion when the audience is clapping, like it's about him. He's the one, he's the guy. And the runner who won, I noticed his guide was running side by side with him, and even for a couple of steps got ahead of him. But before the finish line, the guide pulled back so that his runner could be the first to cross the finish line. And it was just so thoughtful and such a suspension of ego, you know, like this isn't about me. I'm pulling back. You're the winner. You're the one. This is all about you. And I was really impressed by it.
Yeah, that just gave me chills to think about, you know, the power that that takes to be so giving and so compassionate that celebrating someone else's joy brings you as much joy as if it was yourself. And isn't that so freeing, you know, to really, truly support someone else and be as happy for their success as you would be for your own. And I mean, they're a team, so it's his success as well. But yeah, it really takes a loving and humble person to be willing to do that and sacrifice their own solo running career.
Yeah, because the guides are obviously as fast as the runners they're guiding. So they themselves could be out there competing if they wanted to be.
And they've got to have such a bond and like such a partnership to undertake that together. I'm sure not every runner would work well as a guide. You know, they've probably got to be similar strides, similar leg lengths, and similar running styles, and then also just like sort of this brotherhood, this connection, to spend this time together and to train together. And when you were saying that the blind man has to trust that like he's not going to trip on something, they're not going to get tangled up, I'm sure that happens. And so
yeah,
despite them falling, despite them tripping, despite that, you know, them messing up sometimes or getting hurt, it's like they still trust and they still go out there and put their entire heart into the race, which is so inspiring.
Yeah, it's really a good lesson for life. And I think it ties in also to the topic that we wanted to discuss today, which is how to be vulnerable and strong at the same time in your life. And that's kind of how I view this pair of athletes working together, showing all their strength and yet being vulnerable at the same time.
Yeah, I love this topic. And I think it's a huge one for our society to look at, because I know a lot of people are so afraid to be vulnerable, especially, you know, in relationships. I tend to interact with a lot of guys. A lot of the guys I've dated have been very afraid to be vulnerable, because they just don't know what could happen on the other side of that. And they're pretty sure that they're going to get hurt. And I think the only way to really be genuine and live your purpose and your path and be who you are is to be vulnerable and real. And I hope that people can see that it actually takes true strength and true power to be vulnerable and to go deeper into what you really feel and who you really are and show that to others.
That's such a good point. And you know, we live in a society here in the US that values strength and rewards strength. And you can see it all the time. If you just look at the advertising that we get bombarded with, you know, it's all about, you know, I think of car ads, like, you know, the fastest car, the strongest car, the best. And so our whole society really favors being stronger, being more courageous, being more out there. And that makes it really difficult, I think, for us to overcome that bias to decide. But there is, as you said, there's genuine strength in becoming vulnerable and opening oneself. And I think this goes back to the discussion we had in our previous podcast about masculine and feminine, that vulnerability is a more feminine state to be in. And we're moving toward, I hope, toward a time in our society where we integrate the masculine and feminine, which means vulnerability is equally important to strength, and each of us will need to learn how to be both at the same time.
Yeah, that I was just thinking the same thing, that I do feel like it's a little bit of a polarity between masculine and feminine energy. But at the same time, I know a lot of women who are also not comfortable being vulnerable. And although it is a more feminine trait and quality to be emotional, a lot of women are afraid of it as well. And I think that shows up in different ways. I think men cover up their vulnerability a little bit different than women do. But either way, I think a lot of people are possibly afraid that if they were their true, whole, real selves deep down, that maybe they're not worthy of love, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they, you know, we all need to dig deeper to find out what is within us, first of all, and become really clear and aware of what we feel and what our struggles are and what we're going through, and then work to love ourselves enough that we are okay with sharing that despite how anyone else reacts. Because if we know that we love ourselves through and through all of our vulnerabilities, then there's not as much pressure on anyone else to accept you, you know, because you already are accepted. You accept yourself.
And see, you know, I'm in awe as I listen to you talk about this, because you're so far ahead of me in development. And maybe some of that is just our society, that women in general are, you know, there's more space for women to be strong and have courage nowadays than when I was your age. But as I look back, like, my whole struggle and journey, first of all, has been becoming strong enough to be vulnerable, as you said, because I had low self-esteem and weak ego strength. And so while I had a lot of integrity and was an authentic person, it was really hard for me to show people my authenticity. So I tended to hide out of fear, because I was afraid of being rejected if people saw my authenticity. And so for much of my life, I would say I really struggled with that issue. How do I become courageous enough and strong enough to just show people who I really am and not be afraid of whatever their reaction is? So that's something I'm still working on today.
Well, you know, it's funny that you said I've always worked on being strong enough to be vulnerable, but I would actually say you might have to look at it the other way and learn to be vulnerable enough to be strong. If that makes sense. Because like I was kind of saying earlier, the only one safe enough to be vulnerable with is you. And so so in the process of becoming strong, you'd have to be willing to be vulnerable first and see that you are enough and it's not so scary to be real and to be who you truly are. And I think there's actually just strength inherent in that. And you don't have to try to be strong. You have to try to be vulnerable. And in the effort of, or in the act of being vulnerable, you display your true power, which is actual honesty and authenticity and presence. And so it's interesting to look at it the other way. Like, you know, I think you already were strong. You were actually too strong when you were afraid to be vulnerable. Because you would hide and you had enough strength to protect yourself from others. But you know that there's even more power involved in going toward vulnerability. And I think, I don't know, the way I see it, it's just like the strength is actually inherent in the act of being vulnerable. Does that make sense?
Interesting. You just blew my mind there with that. Because it totally makes sense that actually I was afraid of being vulnerable to myself. That,
yep.
As you point that out, that it was my main fear was just of me, because I didn't love myself enough. And so I was suppressing myself and holding myself back in a strong way. I was using strength to hold myself back, but, because I couldn't even show my real self to me, and I couldn't become vulnerable to me. Wow, that's such a good point.
That's always what it is, to be honest, because I think vulnerability is actually truly a relationship with yourself, because actually this reminds me of a post I just saw that you shared, Mom, on Facebook, that it was like a, not really a Venn diagram, but it was a diagram that showed like a circle. And it was like several circles within each other. And the outermost circle, it was kind of like a pie chart, if you will. Not really. It's hard to describe, but.
Yeah, concentric circles.
Concentric circles, yes. And the outermost circle was like, this is the amount of things that I think. Like, this is a huge circle representing what I think. And then a circle within that is what I share with people, right?
Yeah, what I'm able to put into words.
what I'm, oh, one. Yeah, then the next thought was what I'm able to put into words. The next concentric circle inside of that, which is even smaller, is what I actually share with people. And then the tiny little circle inside that is what other people understand and actually get from what I'm communicating.
Yes.
So we have this huge reality within us that other people, as much as we, okay, I put it into words now. Okay, I'm actually sharing this with someone now. Okay, they're only going to digest and really grasp a portion of that. And so I think it's the same with vulnerability. It's actually, vulnerability is actually a relationship with yourself, because only you know all of, you know, the hidden treasures within you and also the hidden shadows within you. And so even in the act of being open with someone else and sharing some of that depth with them, they still don't get a complete view of you. They don't, still don't get a complete sense of your true vulnerability, but you do. And so I think when there's a fear of being vulnerable, it's actually a fear of seeing yourself and being completely real with yourself. Because, you know, even sharing an emotional story with someone else, it gives them a glimpse of your world and your reality and your experiences. But it's actually you who sees it all, and like the God within you that knows it all. And so being afraid to be vulnerable with anyone else, I think, is you avoiding being vulnerable to your, with yourself. And when you're completely able to do that and to look at all your shadows and all your treasures within and be really open and present with yourself and vulnerable with yourself, then it takes so much, like I said earlier, so much pressure and weight off of anyone else's response to you, because you've already been the container for everything that you need to experience. And you've already been the source of love and compassion for yourself that you need to receive. And so giving someone else a glimpse of your inner world is just, it's just a sampling, and it's, there's no test of like, am I good enough or am I worthy enough? It's like, I've already been so open and compassionate with myself that I'm not relying on anyone else to make me feel safe in this moment.
And, you know, that makes me think about the fact that no one else judges me ever as harshly as I judge myself. I'm my own worst critic, my own worst judge. And so my fear that somebody else might judge me is a little bit unfounded, because in fact, other people aren't really walking around looking for someone to judge. Like, that's not always the first thing on their mind necessarily. And so, as you said, I might reveal this tiny part of myself, that the tiny part that someone else is capable of understanding about me, and they don't really care that much. Like, they're thinking about their life and their world and what's going on for them. And so I'm exhausting all this energy worrying that they'll judge me over this tiny little nugget that I just shared with them, when that's not where they're at all. And in fact, it's just me judging me, not them judging me.
Yep.
And I'm afraid of my own judgment and my own harshness, and afraid, as you said, of seeing myself and having to really look, even look at my own light.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as we said in a previous podcast, I think it was the last one that we talked about changing the meaning of things that happen. To, in order to heal your wounds and break old patterns, you have to change the way you're perceiving what someone says to you. And I think it's same with this vulnerability thing. It's like, if you're afraid to see your own self, then you'll use any comment from someone else as proof to validate that same fear that, like, oh, see, I tried to tell them the story about when I was a child and I was afraid to, you know, whatever, speak in class or whatever it was, and they didn't make me feel safe. And see, there you go. I'm not safe being vulnerable and open. So I think you look for evidence and you look for proof in others when you are afraid to be seen. You look for the proof that you're not, that it's not safe, you know. But once you've actually gone within, and shown the light on everything within you, then you no longer seek out the proof around you that that's not okay and that you're not enough, if that makes sense. Like, you don't need the mirror of others to show you that anymore.
Yeah, I have a really simple little example of this very thing that just recently happened for me. And it was mm-hmm. over the book that I just finished, The Tao of Death. I had kind of a dream inspiration of what the cover should look like. I saw it in my head and I loved it. Like, I loved what I saw in my head. And so I was very excited about that. And if we go back to our podcast on hearing your guidance, that feeling of excitement and joy and I love this, it's so great, I love what I saw in my head, that is like guidance. That fits in that category of, look, here it is, this was handed to me. Well, as I said about trying to make the cover, my mind was instantly filled with all this criticism, like, you don't know how to make a book cover. You can't do this. You won't do it right. You'll mess it up. You should hire somebody. You should pay $500 and go hire somebody to make a cover who knows what they're doing, who's an artist, who could do it the right way, because you're going to make a stupid cover that will be ugly. Like, these voices were in my head. And then I sat down and I listened to a few podcasts on book covers, like, and I, of course, I found two podcasts in which both times they said, do not ever make your own book cover. You'll never be able to make it as good as someone else would. So there I was seeking out, and I found the evidence that supported what my own mind was telling me, like, don't do it yourself. Don't do it. You don't know how. You won't do it right. In the end, I wrestled with it for weeks, and I finally came around, and I did my best of creating what I saw in my head, of making that be real. And I went through a whole bunch of other iterations first that were not what I saw in my head, but I finally came back to what I saw. And I finally was able to say, you know what? In my head were things like, people will criticize this. People will make fun of it. No one will buy it because of this cover. But I finally was able to be strong enough to say, no, this is what I saw. This is what I loved, and I'm doing it anyway. And I don't care. I don't care if people hate it and they make fun of it. But it took me a really long journey. And what I wanted to point out is, as you said, I sought out information that ended up validating the fear I had. And I was able to find it easily. I was able to validate my fears with no problem whatsoever.
Well, let me ask you a question. When you sought out that evidence that proved your fear correct, what was your gut reaction that, like, what did you feel inside as you, you know, not really in your mind, but what did you feel in your body, if you can recall, when you read that evidence that still then led you to creating it on your own? Can you kind of like pick that apart?
I definitely felt mixed feelings. It was definitely in my head saying, you have to hire somebody professional. You can't do this. You won't do it right. And see, all these other people are saying that too. But my gut was still saying to me, but I love this. I love what I saw. I love the colors that I saw. I loved what I saw in my head. I love that. And it will hurt if I can't bring that, if I don't do it. If I don't listen to what I love, so that will hurt me. I still felt that in my gut.
That's a beautiful example of how guidance really comes to us and how you can hear the different voices of guidance. Like, your mind is really frantically, chaotically saying, no, you can't do it. Like, don't even try. That's stupid. Like, read this article. People never make their own book covers. That's a dumb idea. But there's still this calm, serene voice in your gut that's saying, I know what I know. I know how I want to see the cover. That's what I'm going to do, right? Like, you can kind of hear that and feel that energy of the calm, higher guidance that still sits in your gut, even as your mind is racing and like overanalyzing.
Yeah, exactly. And when I thought of not doing the cover I had seen, I felt sorrow, kind of a sorrow inside, like, that would be really sad. That would be really sad if you don't listen and you don't do that. That would be sad to let that go and not follow that guidance. So that's what was powerful enough to help me get to the point where I actually did it.
This is reminding me of a blog post I wrote kind of a while ago, which we can post in our show notes for this podcast if anyone wants to read it. But I was talking about, I think it was like how to hear your intuition, how to strengthen your intuition and your guidance. And I created a similar exercise as like what we're talking about right now. When you're trying to make a decision, like whether to create your own book cover or to hire someone to do the book cover, and you're trying to decide like what is in your highest good or what would your intuition say, what would your highest self say. And the little exercise I created for this was to kind of like in your mind imagine that you asked somebody which option to go with, A or B, make your own book cover or hire someone. And this is, it's like imagine that you're actually talking to God or somebody who you really, really trust and respect their advice. And you ask them, should I go with option A or option B? And then imagine what it would feel like in your body if they said option A, make your own book cover. And just watch how your energy responds. And then imagine them saying, no, you should definitely hire somebody and see how that feels. Because it's taking the choice out of your own head. It's not up to you. And imagine putting the power into God's hands or this higher person, whoever you seek your guidance from. And you say, whatever they say is right. Like you imagine that whatever they say is definitely right. And then you see how your body and energy responds. And because what ends up happening is that even though your mind is seeking out evidence that like you're not good enough and that you shouldn't make your own book cover, your higher guidance is still felt. There's an energy that resonates with feeling lighter and freer and more peaceful and more loved and more joyful when you hear this inspiring guidance to go your way, you know, like create the cover on your own. So it's just interesting. It was a cool exercise to see, like, how would I respond if somebody else told me this is what I should do? And your mind is seeking out maybe the evidence that you're not good enough, but your heart and your soul and your body can validate and resonate with the guidance that, you know, came to you originally. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that exercise. And yeah, I can definitely see the two levels of information that are coming to me from my mind and coming to me from my guidance and my gut and how different they feel.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was thinking as we're talking about this, but I've always been really like vulnerable to a fault, I would say. Mm-hmm. I've never been afraid to talk about my emotions or look at them or feel how I feel or really be who I am with other people. I've never been afraid of that for some reason. I came here, you know, as a soul with a mission to bring as much of that truth to the surface as possible and be so authentic, so genuine and emotional. I'm a very emotional person and I don't try to hide from it. But I would say that I've sort of been too vulnerable at times, like to a fault, where I've always had this pattern of needing, like really needing to share my vulnerability with others, like needing to share my emotional process with others. And I know you've served as my like counselor through that, like my whole life, Mom. Like every time I've gone through something, I've like needed to call you and needed to talk about it, needed to process it and share my vulnerability with someone else. And now I'm actually learning how to tone it back a little bit and be my own guide, be my own container for my vulnerability and not need to share it with others. Because what I'm finding now is that sometimes when I'm sharing my vulnerability with someone else, I'm seeking a certain guidance from them that they can't give me. And it's only served to disappoint me and kind of hurt me and make me feel bad when I'm seeking a certain comfort or guidance from someone else by sharing my vulnerability, when I'm actually the only one who can provide that. And I do actually know what I need. My higher self knows what I need to hear. And so now I'm actually learning how to scale it back and share wisely with others what I'm processing and actually confront or refer to myself first for my guidance and be the container, like I was saying, for my own emotional process. And while that won't change my ability to be vulnerable with others, it will kind of change how I'm vulnerable and when, and just being a little more careful and mindful about how I go about that.
Yeah, that's interesting, because we're so different in that way. And I would say I always had the view that what I have to share with people is like a little treasure within me, and that I need to be very careful about who I give that to and who I share it with, because many people are not capable of appreciating it or understanding it. And so I've always been guarded and had boundaries about, you don't need to tell that person everything. You can tell them a little, give them a little piece of the picture, but you don't give everything to them, because they can use it. They can use it against you to hurt you, or they might just trash it and not even recognize the value of what you have to offer. So I've come from the opposite extreme, which is actually what's like, this is one of the reasons that we can do well in this podcast, is we've each kind of come from different places and we're working on similar issues, but from opposite perspectives, which is really interesting. So I've had to learn how to become more trusting and how to feel safe, as you were saying, safe with myself, vulnerable to myself, and safe within, so that I don't have so much fear about sharing with other people. And you may be on the other side of that. You just need a little bit more filtering or a little bit more discernment at times about who's a good person to share that with or not.
Yeah, and I think for me, what it has taken is recognizing that I am my own best guide and healer. And one thing I read in a book recently that I really liked was that on our spiritual path, we eventually have to come to the place of self-referring instead of self-reflecting. So what that means is self-referring is basically referring to the God within you for guidance and for love, and referring to the Buddha in you for peace and for surrender and for tranquility. And whereas self-reflecting is the nonsense of the mind and the ego to overanalyze, should I have said that to that person? Oh my God, do they like me? I messed up. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have said that. Like, what am I doing? Like, and just overanalyzing, reflecting on all of your choices. Instead, we refer to the highest light within, because I think I sort of, on my journey, I was never afraid to be vulnerable and open up, but I always referred to other people's wisdom before my own, which is why I would share my vulnerability so willingly, because I was like seeking guidance. Like, do you know what I should do? Do you know how I should feel? Do you know how to process this? Because I don't. And so as I'm growing more and more and evolving, I'm recognizing that actually my own highest guidance is the best suited to myself. It's, you know, I ultimately have all the treasures in the shadows and know all the secrets to my own reality. And it's only my inner God, my inner Buddha self that knows my truth and knows what I need. So it's been cool to practice. I'm still as vulnerable as ever. I'm still as emotional and open and genuine as ever, but I am now trusting in the highest guidance and compassion and love within me, instead of seeking somebody else's wisdom to help me get through it. And at the same time, I think as I'm learning to self-refer instead of self-reflect and seek my own highest guidance, I would still be willing to share every part of that with anyone, like I am right now on this podcast. I'm sharing with everybody that this is what I do. This is what I'm going through. And
yeah.
So I still want to shine that light just as brightly. I still want to be just as vulnerable. It's just that, and I still may share with people as much of what I'm going through as ever. It's just that I no longer seek their wisdom over my own.
Wow. I love that. And it, While you were talking, I was picturing that image of the concentric circles that you were talking about with the largest circle. It's like everything that the soul, that our soul already knows, everything that the God within us already knows. It's vast and huge. And what another person can understand from what we tell them when we seek them for guidance is just a tiny, tiny little circle in the middle of that. So no wonder another person's advice or wisdom will always disappoint us, because it's never as vast or as on point as what our own soul already knows inside us.
Exactly. Like, we came here with all of the tools that we need in order to accomplish the lessons and mission that we're on here. So nobody else has the tools that you have. And, you know, it's so important to recognize that that's what we're here to develop, is to just, you know, unfold the layers that are covering the God self within us, and bring that to the front, and bring, because it's a mission that really we only know. It's, you know, we're all here on our own journey, that only we will ever truly know all of the ins and outs and traps and falls and tricks and secrets to. And you know, as you were saying that, of course, no one else could know the wisdom that you need. It's also like, you know, that's even given that they have the time to even talk with you about it, because
yeah.
It's like, let alone, you know, they even have a moment to spare. Like, they're so involved in their lives that we can't rely on someone else to be our wisdom giver. It's like, maybe that's why you pay someone to be your counselor. You pay someone to be your shaman, you know, or your life coach, because that's a way to actually get someone else's time and actually let them, you know, have them invest their energy in you. But I think ultimately we don't actually need that. We don't really need someone outside of us to guide us. Maybe we do in the beginning, you know, as we're processing and we're learning a lot. But someday we become our own life coach. We become our own wisdom and higher self. And because what I have found is, like, I've always sought out your guidance, Mom, but, like, sometimes you don't have time. Like, you're not in the mood to talk. And I'm just like, what? You can't just put down everything for me? So I'm realizing, like, I'm the only one who will give me all of my time. So
yeah.
I have to seek out my guidance first.
That's such a good point. And I was thinking, again, when we focus all of our energy and attention on, like, that relationship with another person and what we can get from that other person, we're focusing on the tiniest part of the circle, we're limiting our life to such a tiny little space that we can actually share with another human being, when what our soul wants us to experience is huge and vast. And we're turning our back on all of that, just trying to get what we need from that one little relationship with another person. And so it makes sense that we need both in our lives. Of course, we need the relationships with other people. We need to glean what we can from that. But when we engage in those relationships and utilize the wisdom of the soul within us and everything that it's bringing to us, that's when we can truly grow and experience all that life has to offer.
Yeah, and I think that on this path of learning to become more vulnerable with yourself and developing that bravery and that strength to actually, you know, be real with yourself, it helps to know that God is actually in everything. So, you know, you are God even when you are upset or lost or struggling or jealous or fearful, there's still God in that. And so there's nothing you need to be afraid to be. You can be all of those ranges of emotion and know that you are still an expression of the divine. And then it's safe to be all of that. And it, you know, it's not about being understood by others. I think a lot of us in our egos think that we, you know, maybe God resides in other people understanding us or other people accepting us, but it's actually the highest form of divinity in our human self is being understood by yourself. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't require anyone else to get you. So even if you make a choice, you know, and only you knows only you know why you did it. Only you get why you made that choice, you know. That is still your highest, you know, that could still be your highest calling, your highest path. You don't have to be understood by others. You have to be understood by yourself and the God within, and really truly knowing yourself, if that makes sense, even if it was to take your own life. You know, I think no one else may understand that but you, but there's still God in that. There's still God in your power to choose and your choice to live your life and be on your mission. I think it's only up to you.
So then the challenge of this lifetime is really getting to know yourself as much as you possibly can, coming to understand yourself and to see your whole true self in all of its vulnerability, with all of its weaknesses, with all of its beauty and its charm and talents, and being able to sit with yourself and be comfortable with all that you are.
Yeah. And like with that said, you know, we came here to be completely unique expressions of the divine that have never before been expressed. And so it's so important not to compare yourself to anyone else and not to try to be the God self that someone else is, you know. Be as uniquely you as possible, because you are just as divine as anyone else, and being unique and vulnerable in your own way is what you came here to do. So it's okay if it doesn't look like anybody else's spirituality. It's okay if your choices don't look like anybody else's choices. You know, I think, again, self-referring is so much more important than reflecting and comparing to other people, and just trusting that you came here to be just who you already are, and that's enough.
Exactly. Yeah, I love that. And so the message really is, know that you are enough as you are, and become vulnerable to yourself first, because that will automatically enable you to be vulnerable with others. And the greatest strength lies in being able to just be wholly yourself and love yourself.
Yep, and that strength comes from being vulnerable with yourself first. And then the obstacle, the supposed obstacle of sharing vulnerability with somebody else, actually dissolves into the vastness that you are when you're actually vulnerable with yourself and real and not afraid of it. And I'll bring it back to what we always recommend is that you journal because journaling is a way to be completely you with yourself. No one else will read it. No one else has to know that that's what you feel or think. And you can feel completely free to express anything to your journal. And so that is such an important part of the journey of becoming vulnerable.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And it's the perfect place to expose yourself, expose everything that you're thinking and feeling and everything that you are on paper, where you can return and read it again if you want to. You can go back and measure how things have changed and how you've grown over time in your journal. But it's the safest space you can create for yourself to just be who you are.
Exactly. Well, thanks. This has been such a fun conversation, Mom.
Yeah. Thanks for the guidance.
It's my honor and inspiration to share it and also talk about where I'm growing, you know, and what I'm looking to do and accomplish.
Yeah.
So check out our show notes if you want to read my blog on that, listening to your intuition and feeling how it resonates within you. We'll post a link to that blog in our show notes at itsjustlifepodcast.com.
Yeah, and be sure to leave some comments for us if you'd like, and go to iTunes. And if you like our podcast, leave reviews for us there, because that helps more people to see the podcast. And share this with your friends as well.
Yeah, everybody, thanks for just being you, and keep up the good work. We love you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, we'll see you the next time. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to It's Just Life podcast. Be sure to tune in to our weekly episodes, share them with your friends, and leave us a comment.
Until next time, remember, it's just life.